He always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, whose show is this? And we're live. Welcome, everybody, here to the Lakers Lounge Podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin, senior Lakers insider for Clutch Points. And today on the show, we are going to be talking about Daryl Morey. Shouts to Daryl, man. We are on July 30th. We are less than 24 hours away from August. And then even worse, September. So shit's kind of drying up a little bit. And, thanks to Daryl Morey, we have something that we can actually talk about that is, I wouldn't go so far as to call it pressing, but it is pertinent. It is the kind of thing that people want to hear about. So we'll talk about Daryl Morey's quotes about the Lakers bubble championship. I want to talk more broadly about something I've noticed about, the type of person who knocks the championship that the Lakers won there in Orlando. And then what I was going to talk about coming into today, because we got the latest round of reporting on Jonathan Kuminga, was whether he would make sense for the Lakers as another gamble. They already have a gamble placed on DeAndre Ayton, obviously. They have a gamble placed on Marcus Smart. Does it make sense to just fill out a roster of gambles and, buy low candidates and stuff like that? And, does Kuminga fall in line with that thinking? So that'll be towards the tail end of the show. But like I said, Daryl Morey gave us the topic du jour. So we'll go ahead and start there. All right. Quick reminder, please do hit that subscribe button. Please hit that like button. If you guys are watching on Twitter, head on over to youtube.com/@Lakers Lounge to find the show there. If you guys are listening via podcast in the morning, please hit that subscribe button wherever it is that you get your pods, preferably on Odyssey. And hit that like button as well. That like button tends to help us quite a bit. And it's free. All of the stuff that I just asked you to do is all free. So like, rate, review, all that good stuff. Daryl Morey, everyone, he said the following, and I highlighted the important part of the quotation. Quote, this is, by the way, via The Athletic and Joe Vardon, who recapped that bubble experience, which was somehow already 5 years ago. Quote, had the Rockets won the title, I absolutely would have celebrated it as legitimate. That's honestly where we could stop. All right, that's it. Segment over. We'll go ahead and move on. No, not enough. All right, we'll dive back in. Knowing the immense effort and resilience required, yet everyone I speak to around the league privately agrees that it doesn't truly hold up as a genuine championship. Perhaps the lasting legacy of the NBA bubble is that the NBA should be proud of its leadership at both the beginning and end of the pandemic, even though the champion will forever be marked by an asterisk. Thing is, it's not. The only asterisk here is the one that Daryl says the people that he speaks to. Say it with your chest. If you're going to fucking say it with your chest. If you're going to come out and do the thing where it's like, they stomped my team. Lakers beat the shit out of the Rockets in 5 games in that series. Remember that was the series. I remember when the Lakers traded for Russell Westbrook, the number one criticism that I had of the trade was that the Lakers had just beaten the crap out of the Rockets by ignoring Russell Westbrook. And so it's like kind of funny and feels a little hollow to come from the guy who put that team together to sit here and say like, yeah, look, I'm sorry. I don't necessarily feel this way, but the people I talk to are saying that championship has an asterisk on it. If you're going to say it, bud. If you're going to come out and criticize a thing, just like, don't push out, say it. Come on. It's right there. You're right there. Just come out and say the thing. Anyway, figures. Daryl Morey would fall short of expectations. But the part of this that is just so stupid is the way he starts it. Had the Rockets won the title, I absolutely would have celebrated it as legitimate, knowing the immense effort and resilience required. So what? So what are we doing here? Like, why make the point that you're apparently hearing from other people around the league? Why make the point? If you wouldn't have made that point had your team won, why are you making the point? It's like when he criticized China, when there were NBA teams on their way to China. Take a look around you, bud. Anyway, the part of it that you know, with this specific example of it, is that it's coming from one of the teams that the Lakers raced through that postseason. I made so much money gambling on that team, on that Lakers team, because before the series, it was like, well, are the Portland Trailblazers the best 8 seed of all time? No, they weren't. Lakers beat the crap out of them. Oh, what are they going to do when the Houston Rockets space them out? How are they going to deal with James Harden, famous playoff riser, James Harden and Russell Westbrook? What could they possibly do with those guys? Turns out 5 games. That was another easy one. You know, they met the Denver Nuggets in that conference finals, and that one was closer. And I think that was kind of the come to Jesus moment for Nikola Jokic, where he realized that he needed to be a little bit more serious about the way that he approached the game. And I think, you know, talking to some people closer to Denver, they feel that, you know, Jokic's career took a turn by way of what the Lakers and what Dwight Howard specifically did to annoy him to the extent that he did in that series. But the Lakers went through them and then beat the crap out of the Heat in the finals. And I would welcome any kind of criticism of that Lakers team if they were only good in the bubble, but they weren't.
The first few weeks back at school set the tone for the entire year. But with new teachers, schedules, and expectations, it can feel like a lot. If you're looking to help your child start strong and stay confident, I've been using IXL to make that transition so much easier. IXL is an award-winning online learning platform that helps kids truly understand what they're learning. Whether they're building math confidence, strengthening reading and writing skills, or reviewing science concepts, from pre-K through 12th grade, it adapts to each child's level and pace, making it easy to spot and close learning gaps in just a few minutes a day before those gaps can snowball. Plus, it's trusted nationwide. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL, and it's used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. It's an easy, cost-effective way to get kids back into a learning routine and walking into class feeling ready and reassured. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. Listeners can get an exclusive 20% off an IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLlearning.com/audio. Visit IXLlearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
They were the best team in the NBA that year. And they, right before the league shut down, they had won back-to-back games against the Clippers and Bucks that had everybody going, oh, I remember hosting post-game shows about that. Like, oh, dang, huh, this team might be legit. And then obviously the league shuts down, the world shuts down. And look, like Morey says, credit to the, you know, to the league for finding out a way to get a championship to be played. But what do you want? The Lakers, by the way, are the only team that we'd be having this conversation about. That's the other part of this that annoys me, is that, like, had the Bucks won the championship that year, or had the Heat won the championship that year, especially over the Lakers, we'd be hearing about, like, oh man, that's one of the greatest upsets in the history of the sport, that Jimmy Butler somehow toppled LeBron James and Anthony Davis. Wow, what an effort. Like, the Lakers are the only team that has everybody around the league so salty that you're going to make this kind of a point. You're going to try to make this kind of a point. And it always sounds stupid. And it always comes from losers. Like my favorite example of the people who try to throw dirt on the bubble back then is Lou Williams, who was saying, oh yeah, once we saw that nobody was really going to respect it, we stopped trying. What the fuck? What? You're on your way to winning a potential championship. You blow a 3-1 lead. And the reason you blew the 3-1 lead is because you thought people wouldn't respect the championship. What kind of a loser mentality is that? And what kind of loser mentality is it to say, like, yeah, we would have respected it if we would have won it, but we didn't, so therefore it's fake. What? What are you talking about? And then that brings me to the second half of this point, which is, again, the kinds of people who make the point about the bubble versus the kind of people who went out and won it and the kind of people who really tried to win it. Jokic played great in that playoffs. Jamal Murray played great in that playoffs. Jimmy Butler, right? A whole meme came from how hard he tried in that game against the Lakers, that Miami was able to eke out and win. LeBron played his ass off. Anthony Davis played his ass off. Here's the thing. The point of the bubble wasn't where it was played. Isn't where it was played. It's that it was a tournament where what was sitting there on the line was a championship. Ask Michael how he would have approached that tournament. Ask Michael how he approaches Tiddlywinks. It doesn't matter what it is. The people who have success in the NBA, who have prolonged success in the NBA, win multiple championships. They're the most competitive mother bleepers on planet Earth. They are so competitive that they make otherworldly competitive people, their peers in the NBA, they make them look not competitive. And so the people who take the bubble seriously, that respect the bubble, that consider it that way, we know how Kobe would have felt about it. It's an opportunity to beat the person in front of you. And it's an opportunity to beat enough people in front of you so that you get a championship at the other end of it. The point isn't that it was played not in front of fans in Orlando with no travel. That's not the point. The point is that you at the end of it, a champion was crowned. A winner of that tournament was crowned. That's the point. Whatever you're trying to explain away is like why you didn't try that hard. No, what matters there is that you're admitting to not trying as hard. What you're admitting to is not caring about an actual NBA championship being on the line. Everything beyond that is just you trying to explain it to yourself. You're trying to excuse away your behavior, and you're trying to excuse you not making it as far as you needed to make it in that championship or in that tournament. That's a you thing. It's not whoever won that thing, whoever, you know, was willing to set aside everything going on in the world. Remember, it wasn't just COVID. There was socioeconomical unrest, right? There was the Black Lives Matter marches were everywhere in the country that summer. George Floyd was a thing. You had the shooting in Wisconsin, I believe, that led to a walkout of a game there in the bubble. There were people legitimately worried. I remember we had just moved from California out here to Texas. I didn't see my parents didn't see my kid at the time. It was just Avery for like 2 years. I wasn't able to go back home for 2 years. It was like I was all but out of a job because I was at Locked On Lakers then, and there was no sports to talk about. So nobody was spending on advertising. So you were you were recording to basically nobody, and you were recording for free because nobody had advertising money because nobody knew if anybody would be able to buy anything ever again. You had, you know, Jen was basically not working at the time because she was a physical therapist and she couldn't see patients. And that's just a couple examples. There were any, you know, millions of people who were put out of work and who just had to sit there and drink all day because we didn't know what else we could do. The people who went to the bubble, right? Those NBA players or those media members or the people who helped make the bubble work. All of those people left their families and weren't sure if, you know, who was going to be waiting for them whenever they got out of that bubble. Karl Anthony Towns lost his mom to COVID. Any number of people lost all. I'm pretty sure my grandpa was, you know, he died of COVID before we knew that COVID was a thing. So it was like, to be able to set aside all of that and focus enough to win a championship with all of that going on in this completely unique situation. That's, you know, to again, quote, like Maury says it, knowing the immense effort and resilience required. Like that's what he's talking about.
Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer, SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
So anybody who questions that, and it's always the same person, Lou Williams, no winning to speak of in his career. Daryl Morey hasn't made an NBA championship series yet, right? Or if ever. And by the funny thing with Morey too, he has two of the worst contracts in the sport. Joel Embiid's deal looks like it is going to age like milk, and Paul George's deal looks like it's going to age like milk. Like milk on a summer day in the desert. Like it's just his cap situation is completely bleeped. He's in the middle of these ugly negotiations with Quentin Grimes. Their team isn't really going anywhere, even though they had championship expectations. He hasn't made a championship caliber team to this point in his career. So the thing that you do there to draw attention away from your own shortcomings is to call the question actual accomplishments. And that's all that I continue to hear, right? Paul George had some nonsense to say about the bubble back in the day. The people who have, you know, the people who truly love basketball, they'll say, hey, yeah, that was some of the best basketball we have ever been involved in. There were no other headaches. There were no NBA finals parties that you had to attend. There was no travel, so you weren't fatigued by the time you got to game or as fatigued by the time you got to game three or four of a series. There was no, you know, you didn't have to sort out tickets for your family and friends to these championship games, which would take away from the attention that you could pay to the details required to win that championship. There are plenty of quotes from players who, by the way, have probably had some success since then. Jamal Murray among them, right? He has a championship to his name now. And the people who respected what it took to succeed in that situation, those are the people who I would bet on, you know, moving forward and say, yeah, that guy eventually is probably going to win something. And then they went out and did in Denver's case. So yeah, it's going to keep on happening. And we're heading into, like, this is the perfect day for this to drop, the first truly August story of the summer as we arrive at July 30th. It's just so perfect that this is the day that it would drop and that it would lead to the debate over this all over again. It's not even worth a debate anymore. Because if you look, you know, depending on what side that you land on, if you're the kind of person who's going to question the bubble, you got to look at your allies here. And it's a lot of losers on your side of that aisle. And it's perfectly fine to say, like, you know what? I don't really want to align myself with Lemon Pepper Lou. All right. I'm going to go to the other side of this thing and I'm going to align myself with Michael, who would have respected the championship, Kobe, who would have respected the championship, LeBron, who did, Jokic, who did, Murray, who did, Jimmy Butler, who did respect the championship. I'm going to align myself with the cool crowd over there and let the losers be losers over there. All right. Let's talk about actual basketball. Well, no, we can't because it's still July. But as it stands right now, we got the latest reporting on Jonathan Kuminga. My colleague at Clutch Points has been on top of this as well, Brett Siegel, and he has, you know, done a really good job reporting on what's going on there in Golden State between Kuminga and the Warriors and the world's dumbest staring contest. But the latest on it is that the Warriors only want to offer a short-term deal in the 20 million-ish, 20 to 25 million range per year. And Kuminga wants something closer to 30 for longer. Apparently also the Warriors want Kuminga to waive his no trade clause, and the Warriors want to make the second year of that contract a team option. Meanwhile, it's kind of funny the way that they're doing this, because they're telling Kuminga, you don't matter that much to us, but they're also telling teams around the league that he matters quite a bit to us, and we don't want to trade him either. That it perfectly kind of spells out the crux of the issue there, where it's ownership that feels a certain way about Kuminga and their front office, which feels a very different way about Kuminga. But it does have me, you know, kind of wondering. And also, by the way, right, you have very similar situations elsewhere around the league. Josh Giddey is in the same staring contest with the Chicago Bulls. You have Quentin Grimes in that same staring contest with the aforementioned Daryl Morey. You have the guy in Brooklyn as well, Cam Thomas, who you know, his offer, I guess, apparently is as low as $14 million per year. By the way, a lot of these offers I kind of feel like are fairly fair. I don't know. Maybe I'm anti-player in this case, but like none of the players that I wouldn't want to pay any of these guys a whole bunch of money. Even Grimes, who put up good stats, it was when that situation had already gone to shit in Philadelphia. I think he's a pretty good player, but I don't want to pay him $30-ish million a year. You know, Josh Giddey is one of the most Mickey Mouse players in the sport right now, where he looks pretty bad whenever the stakes get higher. Then he looks great in March and stuff like that. I wouldn't want to pay him. You got Jonathan Kuminga, who keeps on throwing shade at the Warriors for asking him to focus on becoming more of a winner versus an empty stats guy. And then Cam Thomas, who hasn't been involved with any kind of winning to this point in his career, is a great scorer, but doesn't really do much else. I don't see any reason for any of these guys to be making $30 million a year, and yet they're staring, waiting for their team to pay them that way. You're going to keep waiting for a while, I guess. But with Kuminga specifically, I know Lakers fans were kind of asking about Grimes, and maybe the Lakers could get involved there too. I don't see it personally. But the thing that I would say, yes, yeah, Richard, I that is the case. Wow, you don't want to pay Grimes or Giddey, but you do want to pay Austin. Austin has been involved in winning before. Grimes hasn't. Was Grimes on that Mavericks team that went to the finals? Quentin Grimes Mavericks. Just make sure. Quentin Grimes 24-25. No, I don't believe he was. Yeah. No, he was not. So Grimes hasn't really been involved with too much winning to this point in his career. Giddey is one of the reasons that that OKC team took some steps forward was by swapping out Giddey for Austin or for Alex Caruso. And they wind up winning a championship by way of that. So like those guys, like if they were involved with more winning, then yeah, I would be more interested in it. Austin has made a Western Conference Finals so far, was just a key part of a 53 win team last year. And look, if he has a bad year this year and we're talking about, you know, his value at the end of the season. And I'll be, one thing I think I'm pretty fair on is my evaluations of players and their value. To this point, I would say Austin is closer to a $30 million a year player than those guys. But if he has another down year or another down playoffs or something like that, then yeah, we'll take a look at it, and maybe he's something more like a $25 million player or you know, whatever it is. So anyway, with Kuminga, the Lakers have this issue where they're still very four heavy, right? LeBron's a four, Luka's probably a four, Rui is more of a four. Laravia is more of, I think, a 2/3. So that helps. They let Dorian Finney-Smith walk, right? So that that logjam is alleviated a little bit, but they're still kind of four heavy in that your two hot, most expensive players both play basically the same position. Makes it a little tough. And with Rui, right, he also plays basically that position. And Kuminga is a lot more athletic than Rui is, and you know, might fit at least theoretically a little bit better than Rui. So it made me wonder, and I started asking around: would you trade Rui for Kuminga? Rui and like a one of the expirings, right? So if it's like Rui and Maxi, which gets you to like $28 million a year. Would you trade for Kuminga? I guess apparently the Suns are in on Kuminga and the Kings are in on Kuminga, but under very a lot more specific circumstances. Would you trade, you know, Rui and maybe Connect and Maxi to get to roughly that $30-ish million a year offer? I would probably be more comfortable paying Kuminga a lot closer to like $25 million a year. And the nice thing is if the Lakers did do that, you could, you know, get yourself a little further below that first apron. You open up a couple of roster spots and you'd be able to sign a Quentin Grimes or a Vucevic if he is actually waived or bought out. And I was kind of thinking about it. I'd be curious. I'd like to know what you guys would like to know or what you guys think of this too. But yeah, I think I land more on the side of wanting Rui over Kuminga, even though I think Kuminga is probably more talented. I'm going to pick my words closely just in case this does happen. I don't think it's going to happen. You know, this, I haven't even heard anything about this being a possibility, but if it does, I want to be somewhat careful. But I don't think Kuminga is the brightest bulb in the box. And, you know, when you hear him talk about, like right now, one of the details that Shams threw out there is that Kuminga feels like the Warriors have held him back. And I don't know, man. You've been given every opportunity to be, you know, Andre Iguodala. And I know that he wants to be more of like Kevin Durant than Andre Iguodala. He wants to be Carmelo Anthony more than Andre Iguodala. And I don't know if you're, it's that weird thing that we kind of have to do in professional sports where at a certain point in your career, you do have to be more realistic about who you are. And when you're young, you're kind of told, no, don't limit yourself. Try to be as good as you can possibly be individually in all these things. And then what you hear from a lot of veterans is they'll say, yeah, my life got a lot better when I took a look in the mirror and I was a lot more realistic. And I said, I set aside individual performance for team-wide success. And wouldn't you know it, I got paid pretty well. Danny Green's a great example of this. So if I were the Lakers, like it's one thing to be not exactly the brightest bulb in the box, but be relatively harmless in that way. I haven't seen the news, Rose. What is the news from Chris Haynes? Whoa. According to Chris Haynes, NBA star Gilbert Arenas and suspected Israeli crime figure were arrested today on federal indictment alleging they operated illegal gambling business in which high-stakes poker games were played at Encino Mansions or in an Encino Mansion Arenas owned. Wow. I'm not going to touch very much of that because I didn't hear. I read this headline while I've been talking to you guys. So I want to read a little bit more on it before I react to it. But what an awful year for the Arenas family. They had the car accident with their son, and I believe he just his knee just gave out. And then you have this too. What a brutal year for the Arenas family. I don't have any thoughts beyond that because I don't know enough about it to give any thoughts. I'm going to take a quick second here and then come back to the Kuminga thing. All right. So yeah, the getting back to the Kuminga thing, there are a couple kinds of low IQ players in the NBA. I guess there's technically a few kinds of low IQ players in the NBA, but the two that I'm going to kind of talk about here, one is more benign and then one can kind of erode at your culture, and your cultural foundation. The kind that's more benign is like with Dalton, where he doesn't rotate defensively and doesn't know his plays all the time. There was a story making the rounds in Vegas of like they were going through a set and Dalton, the set was for Dalton and they couldn't run the set because Dalton started playing defense when he should have been navigating the play offensively. There are plenty of players that are low IQ basketball players who make it right and figure things out eventually and find the right team and situation. But like while they aren't in the right situation, they don't detract from your team's culture. They just are there, and it's annoying to sometimes deal with players that have that low of a basketball IQ, but like you can get by. They aren't dangerous. Then there's the kind that's like Jonathan Kuminga, who will miss rotations, will not understand plays, but then also they'll go rogue for the sake of getting theirs. They will in practice, you know, whine and sulk and challenge their the players that are ahead of them in the rotation, and try to get playing time in a more mano a mano type of way, right? There's like the difference between Dalton's low IQ-ness and Kuminga's low IQ. Those are two kind of very different things, and I'm willing to bet on DeAndre Ayton because he seems a lot closer to a Dalton than he is a Kuminga. I'm willing to bet on an Ayton because he has shown that he can be a part of winning before, and it's just a matter of trying to get him back to doing those kinds of things again. If he succeeds and if the Lakers are clear with him on what success looks like with the Lakers, then him earning his next contract will fall in line with what you want him doing to help the team most. And I think he kind of gets that. And I, honestly, as I've said on the show before, I think his career was derailed when Phoenix told him what he needed to focus on to get his next contract. He focused on those things, helped get them to the finals. And then the Suns were like, no, we don't want to pay you. And then he was like, well, shit, what do I actually have to do to get paid? And he started focusing on the wrong things. And with Kuminga, I think it's a lot more It's a lot closer to the you know, kind of player that Ayton became, where it was like, well, no, I'll just focus on scoring and individual accolades, and I won't really care how my success fits into the overall makeup of what this team is trying to accomplish. My job here isn't to fit in with you. It's your job to fit in with me, or it's my job to get my next contract. And those players are very difficult to build around, and those players are very difficult to build with. And I would rather have Rui, who has shown an ability to at least try to fit more closely into the fabric of what the Lakers are trying to accomplish. He has improved, not just individually, but in a team-wide construct. Every year he's been a Laker. And I'm more willing to bet on Rui maybe eventually getting it than somebody like Kuminga, especially when I have to pay for that gamble on Kuminga up front. With Ayton, the Lakers aren't paying for the gamble right now. The extent to the Lakers aren't leveraged on Ayton. They owe him $8 or $9 million or whatever it is this season. And then if he doesn't pan out, if he, you know, if the laziness kind of continues and the moodiness kind of continues that I've heard about Ayton, then he's just gone and you're not really on the hook for it. But with Kuminga, if you do what is necessary to get him and you trade a rotation player for him and you sign him to a multi-year contract that he would be willing to sign, now you're leveraged for that contract. You're probably over leveraged at that point. And if it doesn't work out, and if Kuminga just continues the same behavior that he has, demonstrated in Golden State to this point, that has that front office so clearly trying to trade him, even given the way that ownership feels about him, then you're screwed. There's nothing that you could do about that situation if you have him on a multi-year big money contract the way that the Lakers would have to. So to those who were kind of asking, you know, what about Kuminga? What about Giddey? What about, you know, whoever? I'm not at all interested in Kuminga. Just like I talked about yesterday with Zion, I am not at all interested in Zion. Zion is another kind of player where his, you know, low IQ or low social IQ, or a misunderstanding of what it takes to be a culture setter, that is really bad for your organization if the guy who is, you know, your foundational piece doesn't really understand what it takes to be a foundational piece and isn't really interested to learn. And that's, again, why the Pelicans find themselves where they have found themselves since they drafted Zion Williamson. And with Kuminga, he's kind of wired in that same way, where he wants the big money deal and he wants the long-term contract, but he isn't willing to do what is necessary or what the Warriors specifically, what they're asking him to do to earn that contract. I'm not really interested there. So Kuminga, I'm good. Giddey, I'm good for a few reasons. And then, Grimes, I could maybe be talked into, maybe. Thomas, I'm not really all that interested in. He's just not a player type that the Lakers really need. But Grimes, I could maybe get myself to being interested in Grimes. Let me just see how tall he is. He's 6'5", which really helps. Solid 3-point shooter. Like, there are things to like there about Grimes. So, like, if it came down to, would you swap out Rui and an expiring to be able to pay Grimes? Maybe. It just depends on, also, you also have to get Philly to agree to the deal. They'd probably just rather have Grimes at the contract that they would want to sign him to. So, I out on Kuminga, out on Giddey, out on Thomas, mildly interested in Grimes. Probably interested in Grimes. Damn it, I'm probably interested. The other three I'm good, but Grimes is an interesting one. Grimes is an interesting hypothetical. Let's take a quick look at the comments here to see if anybody has anything to add here. Richard Meja, the fact that Daryl Morey is actually considered to be a competent NBA GM should have an asterisk. Not incorrect. Manny, career losers talking about what a real championship should look like. Yeah, exactly. I think so. Like, the problem is, all right, so I see that there's some debate between Giddy and Austin, and what I'll say is Austin is a significantly better shooter, which allows him to fit better with Luka. Whereas Giddy, again, he was just in OKC and his reluctance to shoot made it difficult to play him. So when they swapped him out for Alex Caruso, who is less reluctant to shoot and obviously also gets after it defensively, OKC takes that giant leap forward. So when you're talking about who I would be more comfortable paying upwards of, you know, $25-30 million a year on this team with Luka, because you know Luka isn't going anywhere, I would much rather pay Austin. And I don't really think it's all that close. So, you know, but yeah, here we are. All right, that is going to do it here for this episode of the Lakers Lounge Podcast. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. A quick reminder, please hit that like button. Please hit that subscribe button, all of the nice buttons. And then so here's the deal. I fly to California tomorrow morning. I might just pre-record one of my, because I'm going to start the player preview series, and I might just pre-record my Luka player preview, you know, especially given what he looks like and all of that stuff. And I might just air that tomorrow on a travel day. Either that, or if something happens while I'm in the air or after I land there in California, I am going to be packing my microphone and, you know, I could technically record from my old bedroom there in my parents' house. So, the plan right now is to record a quick little player preview for Luka, and then, you know, allow that to sit there. I also have to write something for Clutch Points. I'm going to write like an off season recap. So I'll write that and then narrate it, for a lowdown. So we'll still have stuff to get us through, the beginning part of my vacation and the latter part of this week and stuff like that. So until then, and until the next time you guys hear from us, I'm Anthony Irwin saying, have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's. And I will talk to you when I talk to you. Have a good one, everybody.